And I've had this conversation for all the years we've been doing this. I started working with Andrew in 2014, and I think we've done 13 policies together. What they had originally when this market kind of took off was the concept that they were going to replace the indemnification section that all of us transaction lawyers have worked with for all of our careers and we're used to. It's a mechanism that's been in place since the 60s. Everybody understands it. Everybody's comfortable with it. It's always easy to default to it. And along, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, along came rep and warranty insurance, and they wanted us to do away with that. And the conversations Andrew and I have had repeatedly and with insurance companies is if you're going to replace those indemnifications, you have to replace them in total. You can't say, well, I'll kind of replace half of it because it doesn't work. I need you to either do it all or not do it at all, not do it at all or do the whole thing. And I'm glad to see that has grown that way. So they truly understand that if the people who will kill the RWI market will be the lawyers. If we don't have total coverage or almost like total coverage, and we're not getting claims paid, this market's going to have real significant problems, and it'll be the lawyers who are communicating it. So there's a lot of ability to discuss these things, and I'm glad to see that the coverage has expanded and has gotten easier to deal with. The retentions is the other issue, and this is kind of a mechanic, and maybe give a little bit, Andrew, and maybe Christina or Rob, you jump in with how we're trying to minimize the economic loss or potential loss to our sellers, but we're doing that through the retentions, which is kind of the old school retentions from the indemnification provisions.
Yeah. And I'm of course happy to yield to Rob or Christina, but, and this is sort of into the nuts and bolts that I glossed over maybe a minute ago. So when we sort of stitch one of these policies into the deal, the typical deductible on the policy, like any insurance policy, it will have a deductible. We use the word retention, but it's functionally the same in this context. So I'll go with the less jargony term. We typically see a 1% of enterprise value deductible. So $100 million deal, you have a $1 million deductible in the policy. We see that deductible further allocated between the buyer and seller in the typical transaction where the buyer treats that first 0.5% as their true buyer basket or buyer deductible. And then the seller has a very thin indemnity obligation against the reps for that second 0.5%. And then the policy kicks in above that. That's the structure probably for 65% of the rep and warranty policies we place. The other 35%, give or take, is a total seller walk away with no cash left behind whatsoever. One caveat, though, is that in both scenarios, the seller has to be obligated to respond for their own fraud in the rep. So if they give a knowingly false rep, the buyer has to have recourse under the transaction agreement, and the insurance company in turn will be subrogated to that recourse. So again, the insurance company or the buyer have to be able to go after the seller for fraud. But short of that, the seller is going to either leave behind, say, $500,000 or zero and walk away. I'll pause.
And David, I'm used to seeing after 12 months, the drop down of the 1% deductible or retention to 0.5%. I don't know, Andrew, if you're used to seeing that. Okay.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. That is totally typical. So this sort of grew out of mirroring the structure that was in place without rep and warranty insurance, where the seller's escrow gets released at 12 or 18 months or after the first audit cycle is completed. And so the point really is just that the policy will actually survive beyond the typical 12 to 18 month survival of the reps. So the buyer will generally have recourse on the non-fundamental reps under the policy. So, financial statements, compliance with laws, et cetera, for 3 years. So if the seller is escrowing, in this example, $500,000, and that escrow is released at 12 months, at that 12-month mark, the policy will essentially follow that release and close the gap so that the buyer does not now step into a former seller escrow and have to eat that if they discover a rep breach post 12 months, the buyer basically gets the benefit of their original bargain, which is the, you know, functionally a 0.5% deductible in this scenario.
Andrew, I'm going to move over to slide 10 for next question. I want to talk about, people hear about RWI and they think, will this work for what I'm doing? Are there any size limitations, industry limitations, anything that is, it really doesn't work in that situation?
Yeah, in a nutshell, no. I checked just before we got on, and I currently have a deal in the market that's $12 million total transaction value. At the end of last year, I placed a policy on a $7 million total enterprise value transaction. So there's really no true minimum. But what we do run into is a minimum cost and a minimum retention or deductible amount. So, you know, and those economics don't always make sense when you get to these smaller deals. So the typical minimum all-in cost, inclusive of underwriting fees, taxes, et cetera, is going to be somewhere between $200,000 and $250,000. So needless to say, there are going to be some $7 million deals where that's just too much to take out of the economics, but it's very much case by case. And then on the retention side, again, the minimum is probably in hard dollars,